This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy 4th of July out there. The White Sox right now are in the midst of a little bit of a scuffle after having been walked off the last two nights at Pro Field in Cleveland. It is certainly an interesting time for White Sox fans. I was thinking about this last night and then a little bit this morning, how far we've come, because there was a moment, I think, you know, maybe in the middle of May, when everybody as Sox fans were having the conversation about how entertaining this team was and how much fun it was to see the developments at this expedited pace that most people did not necessarily anticipate. Lots of great moments throughout the month of June as the White Sox stacked their second consecutive winning month for the first time since 2021, when they had winning months in both May and June. And now, as the calendar has flipped to July, I'm feeling a lot of angst from a lot of White Sox fans these days because there are now expectations, you know, and that's a great spot to be, because I think everybody out there who's a Sox fan would agree that it's much better to be in this spot than it is where the White Sox were at the previous three seasons, losing games and out of relevancy by July 4th. And today, that is not the case. Of course, there is a lot of issues right now, at least amongst the fan base, about what the White Sox do with their bullpen. A lot of people calling for Chris Getz to make an addition to add to help give Will Venable something that he can utilize in his bullpen after the White Sox have been walked off on back-to-back days. If you missed some of this week, though, this is where I always like to catch you up. Again, I'm Jeff Mellor. This is White Sox Weekly, and we do this every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage, which today will begin at 5:30. We have a 6:10 first pitch, and looking at the radar in Cleveland, I think we're going to be good for a originally 6:10 start time. So that's the good news. We shall see. Hopefully that plays out the way I just said it. But of course, last night that was not the case. So recapping where we were at, though, the last time we convened here on White Sox Weekly, the Sox last Saturday had just finished off basically their best win in, I don't know, 50 years. They had beaten the Royals 22-1 last Friday night, and that was something that they had not done since 1970. And so we were feeling it last Saturday, riding high from that victory. The White Sox went on to beat the Royals 2-1 that Saturday night, and Jacob Gonzalez delivered in the clutch when the game was all tied up at one.
The pitch, a swing and a base hit, ball game over. It got under the glove of Bobby Witt Jr. 2-1 the final.
Walk it off again. Wow. This has just become a normal thing for the White Sox, especially in front of the home crowd.
Another walk-off for the White Sox last Saturday. On Sunday, the Royals were able to avoid the sweep at the hands of the White Sox. The White Sox, though, closed out their homestand 4-2 with two wins against the Royals and two wins against the Guardians, who they're taking on right now in Cleveland. So it was a successful homestand, and the White Sox then hit the road to begin the week in Baltimore. And the White Sox have struggled on the road, like, dramatically. If you look at the difference, the home road splits for the White Sox, they have been beyond one of the best teams in baseball at home at Wrigley Field, 28-14. That is the second best record in all of baseball, behind only the Tampa Bay Rays, who are 31-12 at home. So the White Sox clearly get things done at home. However, the road, that has been a different story for the White Sox. They're currently 17-28, but they entered their series against the Baltimore Orioles, having lost 8 straight series on the road. And the White Sox, despite the way you may be feeling right now, actually started out this week in a positive mind frame because they were able to get the best of the Orioles starting on Monday.
Including that game-ending hit on Saturday, and he smokes one out into the alleyway in right center. It's going to get to the wall. Meidroth making his way to third. He's going to be sent home, and the relay throw will be way late. RBI double, Jacob Gonzalez. It's a 1-1 tie in the third.
And doubles were the theme of that. Would go on to win against the Orioles without hitting a home run.
2-2 is hit in the air out into deep center field, and that baby's going to get to the wall. Antonacci rounds third. Henderson's relay late. Sox lead 3-2 on a double by Colson Montgomery. Lefties don't bother him.
From your mouth to his ears, he heard you talking and he delivered.
There's a base hit. Line drive center field. Couser picks it up. Here comes the throw to the plate. Colson slides in and they had him, but the ball came out. He's saved. The throw was in time and right on the money. And I don't know if Colson's slide kind of kicked the ball out of the glove of Rutschman, but he's in to make it 4-2.
And the White Sox would go ahead and beat the Orioles yet again on Tuesday. They won 9-3 to take the series. And again, their first series win in 8 tries. So that snapped a long streak of losing series on the road. So that was a nice effort by the White Sox. Unfortunately, Wednesday rolled around. Getaway day, afternoon game. It was hot, and it was not great for the White Sox as the Orioles, in Noah Schultz's return from the injured list, made the rookie work, and that was probably the biggest issue for Noah Schultz in his return. He walked 4 batters in 4 1/3 innings, 3 of which were lefties, and that's something that Noah Schultz is going to have to avoid moving forward if he's going to continue to be a piece in the White Sox rotation. They're not, like, you know, I know there's going to be they're going to give him a little bit of leash as a member of the rotation, but at the same time, can't keep walking as many hitters as he is, especially left-handers. He was lifted in the 5th inning, replaced by Brian Hudson. Hudson could not pick up Schultz as a couple of inherited runners came around to score, and Schultz would end up giving up 3 on the day against the Orioles in the final game of that series. So the White Sox fail to sweep Baltimore, but they do pick up that series win. Then we head to Thursday, and of course it has been fun for White Sox fans all season long, as they have been for the most part on the fun side of the walk-off wins. Unfortunately, though, with a 5-4 lead Thursday with Grant Taylor on the mound. Now, Grant Taylor was excellent in the 8th inning. He was dominating, struck out a couple of Guardians hitters. He walked the leadoff man in the 9th, and then Brian Rocchio got the best of Grant Taylor.
He hits a high fly ball down the right field line, and it is a game-ending 2-run homer, and the Guardians stun the White Sox 6-5.
So clearly that one stung, and the White Sox at that moment were pulled back into a tie, a first-place tie with the Guardians after that walk-off win in the American League Central. And so lots of Sox fans, and no doubt the Sox team, were champing at the bit to get back into action on Friday. And wild one yesterday, last night, the White Sox were having difficulty trying to score as they were battling in this one. And the ominous weather was rolling in. It was the top of the 5th inning, a couple runners aboard and 2 outs with the Guardians leading 1-0. And I will tell you, in the moment, this felt like it could have been the best at bat, not just of the season for the White Sox, but potentially one of the best at bats in all of baseball.
On a 3-2, swing and a drive, deep left. That is a three-run homer.
Come on.
What an at-bat, an absolute rocket into the teeth of this strong wind, but he hit it low enough where it didn't matter a bit. It's 3-1 Sox.
Now, it seemed critical at the time because the White Sox did not want to be down 1-0 heading into the bottom of the fifth. With the storms rolling in, we were actually delayed an hour and 55 minutes. It could have potentially been a game that fell under the shortened game rules with the White Sox taking five at-bats and trailing 1-0. It was certainly possible that if they were losing 1-0, that it could have been called. But with Vargas's three-run homer, it was never in issue because the Guardians were always going to have to come out and take at least their fifth inning at bat because the White Sox were leading. Unfortunately, I guess it did not end up that way because after the rain subsided and we got back into action, the Guardians, they just kept chipping away one after another, eventually tying the game up and pushing it into extra innings. In extras, the White Sox could not score their ghost runner. And the Guardians, well, they found a way to do it.
The pitch. Watson, it's a ground ball into center, and the game is over as Kwan scores. And for the second straight night, the Guardians come back and beat the White Sox and knock them out of first place.
So now the White Sox find themselves in the second AL wild card now, four games behind the Yankees, who are the first wild card spot, but more importantly, one game back of the Guardians as they will play the third of four games in Cleveland here on the 4th of July. A lot of interesting stuff from last night's game that we will delve into here in a little bit, but first things first, we also have the Major League Baseball draft, which is now officially a week away. Next Saturday, the Major League Baseball draft, in which the White Sox hold the first overall selection, will be taking place. White Sox expected to make their pick a little bit after 12:30 next Saturday afternoon. So what better time than to check in with Jim Callis of MLB.com. Does a great job not only scouting college and high school prospects, but also doing a great job of providing content and creating mock drafts and top 250 prospects. So we're going to pick Jim Callis's brain when we come back about what the White Sox should be considering. And believe it or not, Rock Chalowski, no longer the number one rated prospect, according to MLB.com. I'll tell you who is number one as we talk to Jim Callis when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back on this holiday Saturday. Happy 4th of July to you. Hope you're having a fabulous holiday and enjoying some baseball around the league. And we'll have it for you here on ESPN 1000 coming at 6:10 when the White Sox and Guardians play game 3 of 4. Perhaps, though, if you're somebody who is intimately into the roster building of your favorite team, maybe you're extremely excited about the possibilities for the White Sox that are now under a week away when the Major League Baseball draft will commence. Somebody who will be prominently featured breaking down that coverage, Jim Callis, who does a great job on MLB.com for MLB Pipeline, keeping you abreast as to who you should be aware of about the draft, joins me right now here on White Sox Weekly. Jim, as always, appreciate your time, especially on the holiday today. So thanks for carving out a few minutes for us here on White Sox Weekly.
No problem, Jeff. How optimistic are you about that game starting at 6:10?
It's
dark clouds where I live in the Chicago area right now.
Yeah, no. So and you know, because they're in Cleveland, it didn't look good last night. I will say this, but I've been monitoring the radar, and I think some of the nasty stuff in Cleveland has moved through the area earlier than anticipated. So I'm hoping that they can get started. There might be some weather later in the day, maybe like last night, you know, but hopefully they can get that one underway, obviously, too, because it is the 4th of July, and I know a lot of families, you know, go to baseball games on the holiday, so hopefully we get this one in a timely manner, and hopefully, Jim, it'll be a White Sox win, because there's a lot of panic in the streets right now, which is crazy for White Sox fans when I talk about this, Jim, because how quickly, you know, the roller coaster ride it has been when you consider where we were at May, early June, when people were just like, wow, this is unbelievable. I can't believe the White Sox have gotten where they're at this quickly. And now the angst is there when you drop a couple to your division rival and you fall a game out of first place on July 4th. So it's just wild.
Yeah, those were a couple tough losses. But I mean, I think if you're a White Sox fan, I mean, what was the reasonable goal this year? Respectability, right?
No doubt.
And they've surged past respectability into contention. So I'm with you. Like nobody needs to panic. They've already exceeded expectations. And you can kind of, you know, see a couple years down the line where, you know, especially if they can add some pitching, this could be a really, really good team.
And obviously what's going to occur next Saturday is going to be critical in helping them move to the next step here. And I noted this as I was teasing your segment coming up here, Jim. So for the first time on MLB.com, while you guys have been getting people ready for what prospects they should be watching, for the first time, I believe, since you guys released your first 200 or whatever prospects, Rock Chulowski is not the name atop the board. Tell me more, please.
Yeah, you know, coming into this year, Rock Chulowski was probably the strongest favorite to go number one in the draft that early since Adley Rutschman back in 2019. And number two on our list was Grady Emerson. And they're very close. Like, Rock was much more famous, but it wasn't like Grady came out of nowhere. Like, I keep joking when I ask scouts, you know, what's the negative? Well, you know, if you're nitpicking Grady Emerson, what are you going to say about him? He's from Fort Worth, Texas, so he's from that Dallas Metroplex area. One scout said, I think the worst thing I can say is he's not quite Bobby Witt Jr., since that's the standard of shortstops in the area. But no, he's very, very good, and I know that caught a lot of people off guard. But the more we talk to people, for me, one of the things it comes down to is Rock Chulowski was a very talented player in high school. He could have gotten first-round money if he wanted to sign, but he was steadfast. He wanted to go to UCLA. But as good as Rock was, nobody was talking about Rock Chulowski being the number one overall pick in high school. That wasn't even in the discussion. And Grady Emerson's been in that discussion all year. So I think if you're looking at him at the same stage of their careers, as good as Rock was, there's no question Grady Emerson's better. And who's to say, you know, if you're just, you know, projecting him out, you know, if he went to college and played for 3 years and got bigger and stronger like Rock did, he might be better than him at that stage too. And I think if you're breaking him down as players, the biggest thing from talking to scouts, and again, I mean, we're splitting hairs. Mm-hmm. These guys are close. It's not like, it's funny because fans kind of, you talk about White Sox fans overreacting. A lot of draft fans overreact like all of a sudden, like we're saying Rock's terrible. No, one guy's one and one guy's two, and they used to be 2-1. This isn't that radical change. But if you're comparing these two guys, you know, obviously Rock has more present power because he's a 21-year-old compared to an 18-year-old. But I think they'll have comparable power down the road. Talking to scouts, I think it's pretty much a consensus that Grady Emerson is a better hitter with a better swing. Rock is probably a better defender now because, again, he's stronger. He's more experienced. He's had 3 more years of reps. But they're both good defenders. Grady Emerson's quicker. And I just think, you know, the more we talk to scouts, they think it's a better bat and there's more upside with Grady Emerson. So again, I mean, we're splitting hairs, and you know, the question with the White Sox is, well, who do they take? And we've heard probably for, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks that a lot of people think that the White Sox scouts have a preference for Grady Emerson, but that at, you know, higher levels, you know, and maybe even ownership, perhaps, you know, I don't know whether that's true or not, mm-hmm. would rather have a guy who gets there quicker and is more further along. You know, and it's funny because originally you heard that because, oh man, the White Sox have lost a trillion games the last 2 years. They need help. And now it's kind of flipped to, hey, they're better than they expected. And, you know, this guy could help get them over the top. So I still, as of this day, and we have a week, and we probably won't know until they make the pick because, it behooves the White Sox when they're negotiating with players to, you know, basically take it out as long as possible too. I still feel like it's 48% Rock Chulowski, 47% Grady Emerson, 5% of Von Lackey, which I guess is a famous, a fancy way of saying I don't really know who they're going to pick.
Well, listen, that will create a lot more drama for everybody, so that'll be interesting as we lead up to the draft next Saturday. Jim Callis joining me here on Weekly as we talk through a couple of the options for the White Sox. So Grady Emerson, he's 18. He's a high schooler. He's left-handed. Rock Chulowski, as you noted, 21 years old at UCLA and has been for the consensus top pick up until, as you noted here, very recently on MLB.com when Grady Emerson has finally usurped him at that spot. But it's very close, and as you noted, that it seems like this is where obviously scouts are going to earn their money. But would you agree? It feels like both players, the White Sox, are in position, whoever they end up taking.
Meaning what? I'm sorry, I didn't quite
just like if they choose to go with Grady Emerson and bet on the upside of an 18-year-old, knowing that he's going to probably be a couple years away, or if they want somebody who they think is right now closer to a sure thing who might debut in the big leagues a little bit sooner. Either way, they're probably picking a pretty good player here. You don't feel like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's not like, like one of these guys is so much better. I mean, I don't know. Like, if we surveyed 30 teams and you said, who would you take with the number one pick, Rock Chulowski or Grady Emerson? You're factoring in upside versus floor and one guy's done it at a higher level. I do think Grady Emerson would probably win that poll, mm-hmm. but it might be 17-13 or 16. It wouldn't be a blowout where it's like 25-5. So, if they don't take one guy or the other, it's a huge mistake. No, and these are the two guys, too, from having, basically been immersed in the draft for the last 3 months. They're on a tier by themselves. I think Von Lackey's on a little sub-tier right behind him, the Georgia Tech catcher.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the two best players in the draft.
Jim Callis joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Real quick, Jim, I do have to do a little bit of business. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Jim Callis joining me here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the Major League Baseball draft next Saturday, a week away. So the one thing I think that the White Sox will not be able to do if they're deciding between Grady Emerson and Rock Chulowski potentially is play one off the other when it comes to negotiation, because they actually are both represented by the same agency. Is that correct?
That is correct. They both are represented by the team. And it's interesting because, look, Von Lackey's a very talented player,
mm-hmm.
but I think, and I do think their interest in him is sincere, but like I said before, I don't think he's really the guy. But you're going to do this from the team standpoint. You are always going to have to introduce another option who is not represented by the team, formerly known as Wasserman Media Group.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way, because again, just so fans understand this draft. Yes, you're still trying to take the most talented player, but there's so much that comes in. It's not just ability, it's signability, because you have these bonus pools that limit what you can spend in the first 10 rounds. And it's a pretty hard limit, because if you go over by more than 5%, which nobody's ever done, you start forfeiting future first-round picks, and nobody's going to do that. So you want to take the best player, but you also kind of want to know what it's going to cost you and get that number down as low as you can, because – for instance, the White Sox have a $17.6 million bonus pool.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go 5% over, that's like another, they didn't get up around $19 million. And the first pick is valued at $11.4 million. And the draft bonus record right now is $9.3 million. And regardless of who they take, that guy's not going to get $11.4 million. He's not going to get $10.4 million. It might be $9.5 million. It might be $10 million. But literally if they sign the number one pick for, say, $9.5 million versus $10 million, that's $500,000 that they have that they can add to maybe their second pick and get a guy who is a first round talent who slipped, or even you could add that to say your seventh round pick and get a guy who's a third round talent down there. So the dollars do matter. You don't want the dollars to override how, you know, you want to get the best player. The talent still matters more. But unlike other drafts, you know, when the Bears are taking Caleb Williams, they don't have to sit there and think, well, geez, what's Caleb Williams going to cost versus Jaden Daniels versus Drake May? Because then we're going to slide that money. You know, the yes. NFL draft just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, no, it's a great point as to why the MLB draft, there's so many intricacies that go into play here, and why you're actually, to come full circle, why Von Lackey is being discussed by the White Sox so they could potentially say, hey, Grady Emerson, Rock Chalowski, this is why we don't have to give you $10 million because we like Von Lackey and we can give him $8.5 or $9 million and then take him and then have that savings for our second round pick. They are picking 41st overall as well, Jim. And a lot of people for a while now have linked the White Sox to Landon Tomey, the local kid, the son of obviously Hall of Famer Jim Tomey, former White Sox hitter, who was also a special assistant. What do you know about Landon Tomey? Do you think the dots that people want to connect are meaningful, or do you think Landon Tomey will even be around when the White Sox are selecting 41st overall?
Yeah, everybody's been teasing Mike Shirley, the White Sox scouting director, about. I mean, I remember when I was working on our White Sox top 30 prospects list in February, I was like, hey, can I just add Rock Chalowski and Landon Tomey to the list now, like, and save some time?
Sure.
And he laughed. He's extremely talented hitter. It's funny. I had a scout. It was funny because the scout stopped up. But like, he's one of the more advanced high school hitters in the draft. I had a scout go, he has power, but it's not his dad's power. And then we both laughed. I'm like, yeah, I'll take the under on 600 homers. Like, okay. But like, he's going to have some power. He's not real big and physical. Although I talked to Jim at the draft combine, and Jim said that he was kind of built the same way at the same age. Jim was maybe like an inch taller. And I think that we all knew he could hit. We all know there's going to be some power there. I think scouts liked him more than Jaden Falsky, who was on the same team last year with him at Nazareth Academy, who the White Sox took in the second round and gave a $3 million bonus to. The question, I think, coming into the year was, okay, what position is he? Because he's a high school shortstop. He's not going to be a shortstop. But there was a serious question, like, could this guy, you know, can Landon stay on the infield? Can he stay on the dirt? Mm-hmm. And he spent the offseason working with Jake Cronenworth, who lives in the area, and he got quicker. I think whoever takes him now will send him out as shortstop. He won't be a shortstop, but you feel really good that he's going to be a second baseman, third baseman, and not, say, a left field first baseman. And I think he's really going to hit. The White Sox, you know, as we know, like to take guys who play for their area code game team, which is the showcase in the summer. And, you know, Jaden Falsky was an area code guy. Caleb Bonner was an area code guy. No Schultz was an area code guy. There's like six or seven of them among sure. the best young players in the organization. And so was Landon Tomey. Now, the other question you asked me is the tricky one, because I think he could get close to them. I don't think he gets to pick 41. I have people who told me he could go higher than you think. Like there's some thought he can even sneak into maybe the 20s.
Yeah.
Like, we have him ranked, and we're not factoring signability. We have him ranked as the 34th best player in the country in the draft, high school or college. And, you know, again, you can kind of, you know, you have the same discussion up top. Fans were worrying, like, oh, can Rock Chalowski, you know, the Giants want Rock Chalowski. Could they force him away from the White Sox? And similarly, you know, White Sox are going to have a big bonus pool. They could offer Landon Tomey, say, more money than somebody else. But again, I don't think it's going to be so significant. And even if it were, if I like Landon Tomey and I'm picking at 32, I can just take him and say, hey, we're giving you $3.5 million or whatever it's going to be, $4 million. Is he really going to go to school because he wanted to play for the White Sox? And what's the guarantee that after 3 years of Florida State, that the White Sox can be in position to draft him? So I don't think they can really force him down to their pick, even if they threw out a big number. Everybody knows the White Sox like him. I mean, there are rumors, I don't know how true they are, that the White Sox might like to trade. The only draft picks you can trade are the competitive balance picks, that maybe the White Sox would look to trade something to get a competitive balance pick so they could add an extra pick and maybe be in better position to get him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know what the White Sox would give up, because you're not going to give up a big league piece because you're contending. And the prospect, I think it would take, the type of prospect it would take to move up and get one of those picks, you know, they're not going to give up like a Hagan Smith or, you know, or a Caleb Bonnemer or one of those guys, or Billy Carlson. Like, I just don't think I don't think they'd have a guy who'd be like, okay, this guy makes sense. He's redundant. We could afford to give him up. So anyway, very wordy answer there by me.
Nope.
I think they would love Landon Tomei, and I think I would be – I'll put it this way. I would be shocked if he's there at 41 and they didn't take him, because I think that's almost – that might be the biggest lock in the draft if it's there, but I don't quite think he's going to get there.
You read my mind, because that's exactly what I was thinking. Jim Callis, for another minute or two here on White Sox Weekly. Actually, Jim, you and I are both old enough to remember when Jim Tomei broke into the majors. He wasn't the big lumberjack. He was actually a third baseman who was somewhat agile for Cleveland way back in the day before he just turned into that mammoth 600 home run hitter that he eventually became. But I digress. All right, so Jackson Flora, I want to hit on him just in case, because, you know, he is the top rated pitcher, and I don't think the White Sox are going in that direction. But just to cover our bases here, because I do know that traditionally the White Sox have liked drafting pitchers high because they don't always want to spend on them in the free agent market. So what do we know about Jackson Flora, and is there any possibility, do you believe, that the White Sox would entertain taking a pitcher with the top pick?
I don't. There just isn't a pitcher to do that with a number one pick in this draft. I mean, I think if there was a guy who was worthy of it,
sure.
Like, but there are some teams would be like, you never take a pitcher with the number one pick. And I remember even having that discussion a couple of years ago when there's Paul Skenes in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And we had people who were like, how can you rank Paul Skenes number one? And I'm like, I'll rank Paul Skenes number one. Like, this guy, you know, his best pitching prospect we've seen in like 15 years.
Yeah.
Like,
that worked out, Jim.
Yeah, I feel like the Pirates, like, don't regret that decision, taking him over Dylan Cruz at all. But now, Jackson Flora, big year at UCSB, could be the third time, will be the third time in the last 11 drafts that the top pick, top college pitcher comes out of UC Santa Barbara. But he's got, you know, big fastball, upper 90s, triple digits, good shape to it. Slider and changeup are advanced pitches. He throws a lot of strikes. It's just, and he dominated the Big West. I mean, it's weird because there's this stratification of college baseball where the SEC is so much better than the rest of the league. So he dominated the Big West, had the best year by any college pitcher. It's not quite the same as if he did it in the SEC. And you talk to scouts, he's very good. Everybody agrees he is the best pitcher in this year's draft. I think he's, if you were ranking like the best pitcher in the last 10 drafts,
mm-hmm.
he'd probably be toward the bottom half of that list. He's not, I'm not comparing him to Paul Skenes because like,
yeah, Paul once Skenes in a generation
kind of ridiculous.
Type guy.
So, like, you know, last year, you know, Kate Anderson was the best pitcher in the draft. He wasn't the first one taken. He was the second one taken. And he's, like, currently unhittable in Double-A for the Mariners. And anyway, I think if Jackson Flores in last year's draft, he probably goes in the 10 to 15 range. I think he's going to get pushed up, you know, around, you know, the top 4, 5, 6 picks this year because he is the best pitcher. But he's not, if it makes sense, the standard best pitcher in the draft. So if they took him at 1, I would be shocked. I have not heard that, but also just for, you know, like looking at it, you know, big picture, Jackson Flora is very talented, but that would not be, that pick would not make sense in this draft.
Well, we will obviously know next week, finally, when the date rolls around for the Major League Baseball draft. As always, Jim, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for making us smarter about the draft. Cannot wait. I know we'll be seeing a lot of you on the coverage. So thank you, as always, for the time.
Oh, no, great talking to you, Jeff. And I can't wait. We're inside a week now. We'll know next Saturday.
Yes, fantastic stuff. As always, that is Jim Callis of MLB.com. You see him on MLB Network as well. He has been covering the draft for a long, long time and knows his stuff. So glad we could get him on a week before the Major League Baseball draft. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Friday, July 10th for Mexican Heritage Night as the White Sox take on the Athletics at 6:40. 15,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive a Mexican Heritage jersey presented by Topo Chico Hard Seltzer. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show as well. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come a little more into yesterday's results, as the White Sox dropped their second straight to the Guardians in walk-off fashion, Anthony Kay, none too pleased with the Cleveland grounds crew. We'll let you hear what he had to say about that when we return right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
July, Saturday, here in the park,
4th of July as we're getting set for some baseball in the park as the White Sox take on the Guardians, game 3 of 4. Listen, if you're not going to play Saturday in the park today by Chicago, when are you going to play it, right? So, obviously, as this is, folks, the semi-quincentennial. That's right. We're marking the 250th year of the Declaration of Independence by the United States of America. So hopefully the White Sox can celebrate that with a win today after they've lost 2 in a row to Cleveland and have now fallen 1 game back of first place in the American League Central. This is White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller hanging out with you until our pregame coverage officially begins at 5:30. First pitch coming your way at 6:10. Sox fans, join us for $5 Tuesdays. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, which includes draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett Popcorn Stadium Buttery, Vienna Beef Hot Dogs or Polis Sausages, Beggar's Pizza Slices, Nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. All right, so White Sox lost in walk-off fashion yesterday after an hour and 55-minute rain delay. Prior to that rain delay, though, of course, Miguel Vargas, as I noted earlier in the show, with one hell of an at-bat, epic 10-pitch at-bat after falling behind 0-2, his way back, fouling off pitches, working the count to 3-2, and then on the 10th pitch of the at-bat with a couple runners aboard and two outs and the rain looming.
On a 3-2, swing and a drive, deep left. That is a three-run homer.
Come on!
What an at-bat, an absolute rocket into the teeth of this strong wind, but he hit it low enough where it didn't matter a bit. It's 3-1 Sox.
Yes, and unfortunately, though, the White Sox could not hold on to that lead. The rains would roll in, and we were in a delay, an hour and 55-minute delay, to be exact, and due to that long delay, the White Sox, of course, were not going to be able to lean on Anthony Kay deep into the game. Now, Kay was pitching well. He allowed only that one earned run in 4 innings of work, and he had done so extremely efficiently, going 48 pitches in his 4 innings of work. Of course, because the long delay, the White Sox had to call on their bullpen, and they were not able to hold on to that lead, unfortunately, and Anthony Kay not extremely happy with the grounds crew by the Guardians after last night.
It was good. It was, you know, aggressive, attacked the hitters pretty well. Just wanted to get ahead and, you know, go right after these guys, and you know, they did a pretty good job of it other than those two walks in the third.
Any different approach just, you know, facing the same team this quickly back-to-back?
No, we just tried to keep it as simple as possible, kind of, you know, really did the same approach as we did last time, and, you know, we had some good results.
We just asked him again. I mean, obviously you guys have played pretty decently and battled these 2 games. How tough is it to come out on the short end on games like this both times?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, but, you know, we got another one tomorrow. We're going to, you know, bounce back and go right after him.
It's impossible to answer this, but how far do you think you could have gone had the rain, you know, held off?
I mean, I was hoping to, you know, go 6, 7, 8 innings, you know, give the bullpen some help. But, you know, I think they kind of, you know, messed around with the tarp a little bit. I mean, we probably had, you know, at least 20 to 30 minutes of light rain that we could have played through. But, you know, the second that Vargas hits that home run, they pull the tarp. And so there definitely was some on their part to kind of get me out of the game, and you know, it's pretty messed up for them to do something like that and you know, get me out of the game that way.
You didn't think it was that bad up until that point, or it was
no playable? I mean, I stayed in the dugout for probably 15 more minutes, and it was, I mean, we played through it up until Vargas at the homer, and I don't even think he was finished rounding the bases when they had pulled the tarp out. So there was definitely some gamesmanship by them on that, and I don't think it was right for them to do that, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, and he even said, I asked him that the rain was affecting him on the at bat. He said he wasn't even really noticing
it. Yeah, I mean, it seemed fine for, like I said, like 20 to 30 minutes. And then, you know, the heavy stuff started coming down. I think we probably could have got one or two more innings in.
So there you go. Some tough luck for the White Sox last night due to the weather. Of course, the Cleveland grounds crew and the rain rolling in and Cleveland deciding at that point that it was going to be a rain delay. Obviously, Anthony Kay disagreed. Nevertheless, the White Sox bullpen not able to come through last night. So should be interesting to see how Will Venable navigates tonight's game. Sean Burke on the mound for the White Sox up against Parker Messick. Hopefully Sean Burke can give the White Sox at least six innings tonight because the bullpen has been taxed a little bit. And so I'd be curious to see who is going to be available for the White Sox tonight. Was talking about it with Nick Palazzolo here prior to the start of White Sox Weekly, just who's available in the White Sox bullpen. Obviously, you wouldn't think Trevor Richards is going to be after he pitched quite a bit last night. You know, I would Grant Taylor, Sir Anthony Dominguez definitely seem like they're in play. I think Hudson will be as well. Newcomb probably would like to, I'm sure Will Venable would like to steer clear of him today if possible. Jordan Hicks threw yesterday, although I think he might be available today if needed, but obviously wouldn't be a first choice for Will. So the bullpen a little bit in flux today. So hopefully Sean Burke can give the White Sox a strong outing. He certainly has been really good as of late, Burke, that is, and really good the last time out against the Orioles as well. When he pitched into the sixth, he struck out eight. So hopefully, and with the comfortable lead, the White Sox chose to use their bullpen on Monday, the last time Burke pitched. So hopefully he can get a little bit deeper than he did the last time out. But really, his last three outings have been excellent. Remember his game in New York against the Yankees. He was dominant, 7 1/3, struck out eight and only allowed one earned run, got the win. Then at home against the Guardians the last time he pitched against them, he went 6 1/3, only gave up one home run, the only earned run he allowed in that game, and he struck out six and picked up the win. So he improved to 5-4, and then again pitched well enough against Baltimore where he could have gotten a win, but the White Sox were tied when he left that ballgame, so he was not able to pick up the win in that game. But he's been really good and effective the last three times out, so hopefully Sean Burke can continue to build on that because the White Sox really could use a good start from him if he can go deep into the game today. 312-332-3776. As always, that's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me as we're getting you set for White Sox and Guardians, the third of four games. White Sox also are nearing the All-Star break. They have one homestand remaining before the All-Star break this upcoming week. Once they're done with the Cleveland Guardians, they'll have an off day on Monday. Then the Red Sox will come to town for three on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. And then the White Sox will have their final series of the first half of the season with the Athletics prior to the All-Star break hitting. We also will learn who is on the All-Star roster later today. I believe 6:30 Central Time is when the rosters will be announced. So when we're hopefully in game with the White Sox and Guardians, obviously I'm sure Len and DJ will relay the starters and, of course, any White Sox players that make the roster. They will obviously give you that information as well. Seems like I think Miguel Vargas is going to make the All-Star team. I think he is, at the very least, he would be the lone representative for the White Sox. He's just played so well all season long that I would think he is definitely going to be on the team. Then the question will be Colson Montgomery, Davis Martin, and maybe Grant Taylor. I think those are the three other White Sox players who have, you know, strong resumes and are in the conversation. But don't forget, you always need at least one representative from every team. And so that's where the roster crunch always becomes a game of trying to put together that puzzle. And I don't know if, you know, unfortunately for Davis Martin, his last start against the Guardians was not great. And I think, you know, if he could be somebody who is one of the last people out. Now, I'm hoping for him because I think Davis Martin has had a sensational season and just the leadership he provides on the team. I think he's earned it. But I'm also a realist. You know, it's just it's a tough spot to try and get in there. And because he's fallen off ever so slightly here in the last few starts to the point where he's now got a 3.08 ERA. So it's one of those things where I think he's going to be on the fringes and we shall see. Hopefully he'll get the nod. And then Grant Taylor, listen, he's been awesome, but he doesn't have that lofty save total that, you know, people like to point to when they're picking relievers for the All-Star team. So that could be, you know, a reason why Grant Taylor does not make it. And if anything, I look at it and I say Davis Martin, Grant Taylor, it could be a situation where if one goes, the other doesn't for the White Sox. And then ultimately, Colson Montgomery, I'll talk a little bit more about him when we come back. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Saturday, July 11th, as the White Sox face the Athletics at 1:10. You come early for a pregame MLB draft watch party. You enjoy 20% off all food and beverages, plus enter the ballpark. Be sure to stay after the game for the postgame alumni home run derby presented by Blue Moon. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/derby. So today is the 4th of July, which means that it is a very important anniversary for one member of the White Sox. Tell you who that is when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on YouTube.
There's a swing and a bloop out in the shallow left. Montgomery lays out and he made an amazing grab.
Whoa.
What a play by Colson Montgomery.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
We are officially 1 year into Colson Montgomery's career. Remember, last 4th of July, he made his debut in Colorado at Coors Field and came through with that fantastic over-the-shoulder diving catch. You know, it actually, one thing I always like to point out, because I'm about to give you Colson's stats now through one full calendar year, he didn't actually hit a home run until his 16th game in the majors. And if you think about it, that's not that big of a deal because, listen, it's going to take every rookie who's making their debut a little bit of time, usually, to find their footing, get accustomed to big league pitching. And there's just a period of time, usually much longer than 15 games, where, you know, it takes a while for a rookie to actually make an impact. Well, after those 15 games where Colson Montgomery was figuring it out at the big league level, well, since then, he has hit 42 home runs. That's right. He's got 42 home runs, 104 RBIs. And now, the one thing I would like Colson to do a little bit more is be a little bit more effective when it comes to maybe drawing a few more walks. That's one thing I would love to see him improve upon. But ultimately, he's slashing .228 with a .308 on base, and he's still got a .498 slug. So his OPS, it's above 800. It's .807. 42 homers at shortstop with excellent defense, better than I think most people anticipated. Now, something that's been a theme over the last week or so has been that Colson Montgomery has made some uncharacteristic errors. Hopefully that's just a bit of a hiccup and he can bounce back. But, you know, that was one of the criticisms when he did finally get up to the big leagues was, hey, would he be able to stay at shortstop? And through the first calendar year, he has been, I think he's answered the bell more than anybody would have anticipated. But again, the last week has not been ideal, including an error last night, which allowed the Guardians to tie the ball game up. But if he can give the White Sox the defense that he's given him in this first year of his career, and with that same type of power that he's generating, he's going to be a top five shortstop in the game. And he right now, you know, if you look at it, he has a 5.2 WAR in his first 154 games. You know, that's sensational. That's an all-star caliber player. And, you know, the White Sox, I think, have been more than pleasantly surprised with what he's been able to give them in his first year as a big leaguer. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Hey, Sox fans, grab your friends and head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. You get one ticket and two beers starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. Let's go on out to the South Side. Say hello to Russell. Hey, Russ, happy 4th, man. What's going on?
I'm disappointed in the last two games. The walk-off, the Jerry walk-off, that we contributed to their walk-off.
You're right.
You know?
Yep.
And my thing is this, that won the first game when they had the lead 5-4 and Chase got on second, right?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, okay, you got Tristan Peters, you know, a good bunter now. Just get that guy over the third, get that run back, because Isaac hit that home run, right? They made it 5-4.
Correct.
Get that run back, get him over the third, let's get the run back. Because you might need it. You can't get comfortable.
No doubt.
You might need it. And they didn't do it. The guy was swinging for the fences and hit a pop-up. Shallow, really shallow. He tried to go to third on it. He was going to be dead, Doug, anyway, and he tried anyway.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, Russ. You're not wrong. I will say this. You know, ultimately, that's kind of Will Venable's call as to whether or not he wants Tristan Peters to go ahead and lay down a bunt and advance Chase Mydroth to third. I agree with you. I think, although I will say this, Tristan Peters has had opportunities to lay down bunts to sacrifice runners over, which has not always been his best attribute in the big leagues this season, to the point where maybe that's why they didn't necessarily want him to. He's good at bunting for a hit. But in terms of actually sacrificing, I don't think he's been, you know, as good as you maybe would traditionally expect a center fielder who's a really good glove, you know, who is not necessarily a great hitter. Although I will tell you, Peters, what he's been able to give the team offensively has been a huge surprise and a huge plus. But you're right, Russ. You know, you just, whether it's a bunt, you know, and they clearly didn't ask him to do that in that situation. But then at the very least, you just want him to get the runner over. And let's add in, Chase was thrown out at third base by Stephen Kwan. That perhaps is the most egregious issue in everything, is that if you're going to tag on that play and try to advance, you better be damn sure that you're going to be safe. And I don't know how anybody who knows Stephen Kwan, whether he's, I know he was playing center field the other night, but if he's in left, if he's in center, it doesn't matter. He's still a Gold Glove caliber player who's got a great, accurate throwing arm. So I'm with you, Russ. I didn't love the fact that they made another out on the base path. And that's been something that I think if you really want to like look at this big picture, what the first two games of this series has shown the White Sox is that, hey, look at what Cleveland's bringing to the table right now. They don't have Jose Ramirez. They don't have Angel Martinez. They just got Chase DeLauder back into their lineup about a week ago, less than a week ago. And so he hasn't really necessarily, you know, been the player that he was early in the season. So the White Sox are taking on a depleted Guardians offense. And the Guardians have still found ways to win ballgames the last 2 days against the White Sox because they've been doing the little things. They've been taking the walks. They've been accepting their walks. The White Sox pitching needs to be better about not issuing those free passes. And they need to force the Guardians to beat them and be in the zone. Because offensively, this lineup that they're putting out there without Jose Ramirez, without Angel Martinez, it lacks some punch. And so my hope is that today, if the Guardians are going to beat you, make sure that they beat you by actually hitting the ball. Don't give them those free passes, because that's been part of the huge issue for the White Sox the last couple of days. 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard. We do have a couple of starting lineups in that I can relay for you here coming up next. But I want to let you know, Sox fans, if you head to the ballpark on Saturday, July 25th, as the White Sox take on the Astros at 6:10, 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a City Connect basketball warm-up presented by Wintrust. Or skip the line, secure your promo at checkout with guaranteed promo. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, a little under an hour away from the pregame show beginning for White Sox and Guardians. But when we come back, I'll get you today's lineups. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, weekdays 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
White Sox try and put an end to a 9-game losing streak at Progressive Field. tonight for game 3 of 4 in Cleveland on the 4th of July. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Hey, Sox fans, families eat free. That's right. Grab your family, head to the ballpark with a family park starting at $21. Each family member gets one hot dog, drink, chips, and a cookie. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. All right, so the White Sox will try and get the job done tonight in Cleveland, and they will do so by sending out this lineup. Miguel Vargas going to lead off and play first base after becoming the third member of the Chicago White Sox with 20 home runs so far this season, or at least 21, I should say, as Colson Montgomery has 21. But Miggy joined Colson and Munetaka Murakami with the 20 home runs. They're the only trio in baseball so far this year that have 20, and the White Sox became the first White Sox trio to do so since the 2006 White Sox had Jim Thome, Jermaine Dye, and Paul Konerko do it before the All-Star break. So illustrious company that this trio is keeping in White Sox history. So Miggy leads off and plays first base. Randall Grichuk, the DH, will bat second with a lefty on the mound for Cleveland, Parker Messick. Chase Mydroth at second base, batting third. Colson Montgomery, third base and cleanup. Junior Perez is in left field, batting fifth. Braden Montgomery, the switch-hitting right fielder, will bat sixth. Luis Angel Acuna at shortstop, batting seventh. Tristan Peters, the lefty center fielder, hits eighth. And then Drew Romo, the switch-hitting catcher, bats ninth. For the Guardians, it will be second baseman rookie Travis Bazzana. The lefty has been really good so far for them this season with a 767 OPS. Chase DeLauder, I mentioned him earlier, he's going to DH and bat second. He's left-handed. Kyle Manzardo, also left-handed, playing first base and batting third. Khalil Watson, the other rookie, who has been already a nuisance to the White Sox, he's in right field batting cleanup. Brian Rocchio at shortstop, the switch hitter, hits fifth. Cooper Engle, another rookie, who has played barely a week in the majors. He's going to be in left field. Now, he's primarily a catcher in his career, but the White Sox saw him have a huge faux pas in the first game when he dropped a routine fly ball in left field, but the White Sox could not take advantage of that. Obviously, that came back to bite them a little bit because they lost on a walk-off. Daniel Schneeman is going to be at third base, batting seventh. He's left-handed. Austin Hedges, one of the few righties, the only right-hander in the lineup, actually. He'll do the catching and bat eighth. And then Stephen Kwan, the lefty center fielder, rounds out the Guardians lineup. Sean Burke will be on the mound for the White Sox. All right, when we come back, we'll go around the majors. A couple of things taking place that I want to hit on. And then, of course, expecting to talk with Scott Merkin of MLB.com, covers the White Sox, has been for a long, long time. We'll check in with Scott Merkin and see what he thinks about where the White Sox are at. 86 games into the season with the All-Star game quickly approaching. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays, noon to 2, ESPN Chicago.
Cronenworth to right field, and back goes Kyle Tucker at the wall. It's gone! Into the crown zone in L.A. A three-run home run for Jake Cronenworth, and the Padres take a 6-0 lead.
Highlight courtesy of the Padres television network, Don Orsillo on the call there. What you didn't hear, though, was that was the Padres bashing Roki Sasaki yet again. And not sure if you caught this, but there were some videos making the rounds of what looked like an extremely upset Roki Sasaki after he had been chased yet again and had another poor performance for the Dodgers. He certainly has not been exactly the type of pitcher that they expected they were getting when they broke the bank to bring him over from Japan. And his last outing, which was on Thursday, he gave up 6 earned runs, including 3 home runs, that one you heard right there, to Jake Cronenworth. Now, the Dodgers, they honestly, it ultimately didn't matter because Believe it or not, they actually beat the Padres in that game 12-7 despite Sasaki struggling. But yes, there was a video making the rounds of what looked like a very red-faced Roky Sasaki, potentially with some water welling up near his eyes. And the conversations were obviously then making the round about Roky Sasaki. And then, as is what happens these days during our society, of course, is you get the leaked video, the leaked audio from what happened. And I thought this was unfortunate to hear Dave Roberts just really go off on Roky Sasaki.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris.
All right, so obviously you, the astute listener out there, know that Roky Sasaki doesn't speak English. That wasn't Roky. Of course, Dave Roberts doing that weird Tom Hanks impression caught me off guard. No, but Roky Sasaki did come out and say that he was not crying. He was just a little flustered, but he in no way was crying, and he denied any allegations. And, it, you know, so if you saw the video and you thought he was crying, he has vehemently denied that, and that was not the case. But obviously, that signing has not gone the way the Dodgers anticipated it would. Of course, I know everybody out there is definitely feeling for the Dodgers because of that. But I digress. Also, something I wanted to note around Major League Baseball, since we're talking about it, have you seen what with Paul Skeens, who I think if we entered, as we entered the year, it was pretty, I guess I can't say unanimous, but we could maybe go unanimous in terms of who the best pitchers in the American League and the National League were entering this season. And that would be Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens. I think they had the pretty undisputed belt when it came to who was the best pitcher in their league. Now, Paul Skeens, the Pirates have not actually won a game in which Paul Skeens has pitched in his last 8 starts. And that is kind of wild when you consider he won the Cy Young Award last year with a 1.97 ERA. Now, wins has not, they have not always come easy for Paul Skeens because the Pirates have not always given him the best run support. And they also defensively have not always done a great job of backing him. However, as of late, Paul Skeens' dominant self either. And last time out, 7 earned to the Philadelphia Phillies in a game and loss. And he, the game prior to that, also gave up 4 earned runs and 5 innings of work. Very un-Paul Skeens-like. He now has an ERA of 3.62. And the one thing I would point out is that it seems unlikely that Paul Skeens is going to repeat as the Cy Young Award winner in the National League, because if Jacob Mizorowski doesn't get the job done, I think Christopher Sanchez likely will. Maybe you could throw Chase Burns in, depending on how the season wraps up, because he's 10-1 for the Reds. But if you look at what Mizorowski has done, he's kind of taken the mantle from, or he's you know, topped the mantle from Paul Skeens right now, because Mizorowski for the Brewers, as he now continually seems to throw 105 these days. Mizorowski has a 1.47 ERA. He has struck out 156 innings. He's struck out 156 hitters in 104 innings. That's what I meant to say. And so he's been the most dominant pitcher in all of baseball, not just the National League. Of course, Christopher Sanchez has had a ridiculous run where he went 50 innings without allowing an earned run earlier this season for the Phillies. He's 10-3 on the even 2 ERA. So we've got a lot of National League pitchers who have been unbelievable. And because of that, they've put Paul Skeens in a spot where he's probably not going to be able to go ahead and repeat as the National League Cy Young Award, even though I do believe he will be officially announced as a All-Star later today, even though he's had a little bit of trouble here down the last couple starts for the Pirates, but nevertheless. Also, I wanted to mention, did you happen to see what happened with Aroldis Chapman yesterday with the Boston Red Sox? If you missed it, Let me catch you up right now. Do you have that highlight, Nick? All right, go ahead. Fire that away.
And the left-hander from the stretch. Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss, struck him out, and that's a record for all time. 1,364 strikeouts for Aroldis Chapman. That's the most of any relief pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball.
That is something else. That is quite an achievement. History of the game. Look at that little smile on the face.
So there you go, Aroldis Chapman, striking out the most hitters as a relief pitcher yesterday. He sets the mark. And the question I think I wanted to bring up, because Aroldis Chapman has been a name that has been linked quite a bit over the last couple of weeks to the White Sox, and because, of course, the last couple of days, it has only intensified when you consider the White Sox have been walked off two games in a row. So a lot of people around baseball are asking the question, should the White Sox add a relief ace, someone like Aroldis Chapman? Could they even couple that with a starter like Sonny Gray? Could they really break the two players to go? I'll be honest. Listen, if Aroldis Chapman is available, I think the Red Sox are probably going to be likely to move him, although they've been playing a little bit better of late, which included a sweep of the Yankees last weekend. So we're going to kind of have to see what Boston does. But right now, they're 10 games under 500. So I think the thing that we're, you know, just under a month away, I believe the trade deadline is August 3rd this year. It's a Monday, August 3rd, because they don't do it on the weekend. So Monday, August 3rd is the MLB trade deadline. So we are literally just about a month away from the trade deadline. And I think for the Red Sox, who are 10 games under, they're going to have to play really well if they're going to get back in it and convince their owners to not sell off players like Aroldis Chapman and Sonny Gray. The question would be, do the White Sox fight to part with some of their top prospects in order to obtain an Aroldis Chapman or a Sonny Gray? What I will tell you is I do think Chapman, because just in terms of a rental, is going to be one of the most sought after players in the majors. So I don't think he's going to come cheaply if the White Sox want to make an investment in someone like him. And I know White Sox fans out there who are very frustrated with Sir Anthony Dominguez's struggles would love for the White Sox to add an elite strikeout reliever like Chapman. I don't think the White Sox are going to, trump other offers from other contenders for somebody like Chapman. Now, I think they might be, in play for maybe a less heralded reliever to add and maybe a starter as well. But I don't think Chapman is necessarily going to be the guy who the White Sox are going to be adding at the trade deadline. That's just my own personal feeling. I think he's going to probably cost a little too much for their liking, especially when you consider where they're at when it comes to their timeline with all their young players. I don't think the White Sox want to necessarily jeopardize a lot of the other younger players they have in the minors that can add to this current young crop of players. And so that's why I think they'll probably pass on someone like Aroldis Chapman. Hey, Sox fans, create your own game plan with a 10-ticket flex pack. You pick the matchups and the seats. Total freedom, total fun. For information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call or text 312-674-1000. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, bringing you up to our pregame coverage, which starts at 5:30. When we come back, MLB.com White Sox beat reporter Scott Merkin joins me right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Captain Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly, getting set for game number 3 of 4 in Cleveland between the White Sox and Guardians. One man who's covering the White Sox in Cleveland is going to join us here in just a moment. But before we bring him in, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
AL Central showdown on the 4th of July in Cleveland. Hopefully, Progressive Field is treating Scott Merkin better than it's treating the White Sox, as they've lost 9 in a row, including the last 2 in walk-off fashion. Merk, how are you doing here on 4th of July in Cleveland, my friend?
I'm doing better in the last few days. I'm sitting outside the Victory Club here at Progressive Field, but the last 2 days before the rain last night, it felt like, you know, being on the surface of the sun, as Chicagoans can understand from the last few days before coming out here. And now it's a little but good crowd, big night, good weather. The rain seems to have passed, and Sox trying to get back in it, you know, if not break even, at least get one of these.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Merck, obviously, it has been in a lot of ways a very, you know, it's been a great season for far, but it's interesting.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because the one thing is, you know, I think we've moved past the point now where, you know, everybody doesn't want to talk about the White Sox being a cute, fun team that everybody enjoys watching. Now there's real stakes because I think they've proven that they belong. And so now everybody, all the Sox fans, they're getting on the Sox after a couple of walk-off Guardians. You know, how do you view this right now as they're 87, three games above 500 and a game out of first place? But obviously, you know, the road wearies, it's been tough on them on the road so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, and they're also, we should add, they're, you know, if the season were to end today, they are a playoff team too,
no
right?
Doubt.
They're a wild card right now. I think this is what you want as a Sox fan, right? Yeah, I mean, they'd like to have the same record as Seattle did when they won, what was it, 116 games?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen this year. You know, this is a team that's on the rise. And, you know, I think AJ used to say this all the time, that your record doesn't lie. And, you know, they're a team that's good but not dominant. They're a little above 500. And I think it's a lot like a lot of young teams in that you dominate at home and then you struggle a little bit on the road. And I think part of it, and I'm not speaking out of turn because the players have said this over and over again, the fans have been tremendous at Raid Field this year. It's been amazing, you know, after not a huge turnout the last 3 years when they were losing 100 or more.
Sure.
Just how great the support has been. And I think that makes a difference for a young team like this. And I was saying last night that a game last night, they win probably at Raid Field, and actually they did. It was like the first game against Cleveland, right?
Yep.
So I think you can micromanage a lot of things here and say, oh, you got to do this, you got to get this, you got to do that. But, I mean, was Cleveland doing the same thing when they lost the first two in Chicago, right? I mean, Cade Smith is one of the best closers, let alone in the American League, probably all of baseball, and the Sox got to him twice in Chicago. And I don't think that the Guardians decided we have to revamp everything. Granted, the Sox don't have a Cade Smith at closing. Grant Taylor's great, but he's more a multi-inning role.
Yes.
Chris Getz knows what he needs, and this is a team that believed they were going to be good from back at Sox Fest when we were talking to the guys. So it's not a surprise to them. And now the question is, you know, how do they handle this kind of stretch run after the All-Star break when it's, you know, it's going to get tough. Everything is going to be micromanaged. But if you're a Sox fan, if you can't have the 116 wins, this is the next best alternative, right? A team that's a playoff team, a team that's competitive, a team that has a chance to play in October if things go right.
No doubt about it. Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox for MLB.com, joining me here on ESPN 1000. You hit on it perfectly, Merk, right? Like, and something that Chris Getz has, you know, told all of us, I think, is that this team has kind of put it on him to be a little more aggressive than maybe he originally thought.
Because
they have played so well. I'm curious, what do you think the appetite might be for the White Sox when it comes to trading potential prospects? That's the tough balancing act that Chris has, where he's got to look at the roster, understand where they're at in this developmental timeline, but also understanding, hey, they've earned maybe a right for him to, you know, reinvest a little bit at the major league roster without getting crazy and maybe, you know, trading away a young player who he believes can also be, you know, a really integral part of the roster.
Right. I think, you know, first of all, you have to look internally and say they're going to get, you know, help from Munetek, and Murakami is probably coming back, if not, you know, the end of next week, right after the All-Star break, right?
Yeah.
If things continue going well. We've seen that before with Kyle Teal, who is, you know, doing great in rehab, and then something comes up and it adds another couple weeks in. Right now, it looks like Murakami is on his way back. You have a guy like Tanner McDougal, who should be able to help the bullpen this year, maybe become a starter, you know, years future. And then Hagen Smith, probably, when he gets healthy, he's going to be back there too. So there's some guys they can add from within the system. In terms of trades, you have to be realistic, right? I mean, the Sox are far from the only team that's looking for starters and relievers.
Yep.
That's pretty much every team in baseball, even some that probably know they have no chance to be a playoff contender. So Chris is not, I would be surprised if Chris trades anything for a rental because they're not at that point. So I would think it's guys that can help you now, can help you next year, maybe the year after that. But again, you know, if a player X, pitcher X, the return is asked for, is Colson Montgomery or Braden Montgomery. I get that those kind of guys are not traded. much anymore. But if there's this many people interested in a certain pitcher, let's just say Michael Wacha is an example, because Kansas City looks like, you know, they're going to have a tough time climbing into playoff contention. Why would the Royals sell short, right? Just keep the guy. Good Seinfeld reference there, by the way. But, you know, but I mean, you're going to ask for the moon, and if you don't get it back, then you can keep money. He's not a rental. That's just an example. So I think it's got to be real. And I get that, you know, the AL is not great this year. Tampa's been tremendous. The Yankees are struggling. And there really is no one else dominant. Like, truly, where you say you got to go through the team like the Dodgers, you know, or the Braves, or even the Brewers, right? There's no one you say we got to go through them to get to the World Series. So I understand that. You can only win the year. That's one of my biggest problems with the rebuild, is you only win the year that's at hand, right? And you're not guaranteed that just because 26 has been a revelation, 27 and 28 are going to be as good, right?
Yeah.
So you got to go for it. But again, you don't want to dismantle what Chris and the front office and the whole staff have so meticulously put together.
No, that's a great point. Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly. That was my move. He stole my move referencing Seinfeld, but nevertheless, we'll let him stay.
I think it was stop short, and I did sell short.
Yeah,
actually.
That's all right. I got your reference. It's all good. We're on the same wavelength here. Scott Merkin, though, he does a great job covering the White Sox. He's also got the White Sox newsletter. If you're not a subscriber and you are a Sox fan, what are you waiting for? All right, Merk. So one thing I think is worth noting here is that we are actually on the 4th of July here, the one-year anniversary of Colson Montgomery making his big league debut. And, he's played in 154 games now over the calendar season. He's got 42 home runs. You know, he's playing, I think, better than adequate shortstop. Now, the interesting thing is the last week or so, he's actually had some uncharacteristically poor defensive plays. But just after a year, what do you make of what we've seen from Colson Montgomery, the major leaguer?
I mean, first of all, his elevation to the big leagues and then his excellence in the big leagues should be studied, right? Because I've talked to some scouts who saw him last April, and I know we can't keep going back. You know, and talking about what happened last year and all that. But, you know, he was in a rough place in April, right, with Charlotte, where they sent him down for the reset in 25 to Arizona. And, you know, went from there. So I think it should be studied how much he's come forward. And I think he's an impact type of guy. You know, I think Will talked yesterday about, you know, he thinks there's more contact in this game in the future. Remember, these guys are all, for the most part, very young and very early on. I mean, like we just said, this is the year anniversary of him being in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's got more to go. It's interesting to me, though, how this whole up the middle plan is going to play out, you know, and a lot depends on what happens a week from today.
Yes.
The Sox have the one pick. You have a guy like Billy Carlson who's dealt with injury all year, who people have raved about, you know, his defense. You have Colson who can play short and third. So, you know, how does this, Caleb Bonimer is making an impact. So how does this go forward? But in that same sense, Colson has been a great player. He's a great guy in that clubhouse. He's a feisty competitor and has raw power, you know, just great power. And Will believes, and I trust Will, that there's going to be more well-rounded in his offensive game as it moves forward.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. Yeah, he's 24 years old, and he's, you know, one season into his big league career. For most players, generally, you know, the peak comes around 25, 26, 27, 28. So
right.
He's entering
right.
His prime here. I think, you know, what he's showed so far is, you know, more than most people could have hoped for, considering, like you said, where he was at last April. And even, you know, the minor league season prior to that, when things didn't necessarily go what we were hoping. But that just goes to show that progress for a prospect is not always linear. Jeff Meller hanging out with you until 5:30 when we start our pregame coverage. Scott Merkin, who is in Cleveland right now, getting set for White Sox and Guardians. Merk, Sean Burke on the mound today for the White Sox. And he's been, you know, it seems like, you know, he's been up and down at times throughout his career, but this season, I feel like he's found a better rhythm, especially over the last three starts. What do you make of Sean Burke? Do you think he is kind of at a spot where he's a little bit more consistent in his career path?
Yeah, I think he's got the stuff to be a number one guy, you know, and I think he's starting to figure it out a little more. He's getting, you know, a thorough runway to take off in the rotation. And I think he's going to stay there for the rest of the year, regardless of what kind of moves Chris makes. But, you know, he's got good stuff. His off speed is hitting a little more in the zone. And I think it's just a lot of these guys, it's just, they don't like using the word comfort, but it's a confidence thing, right?
Yeah.
I think he has really developed, really found a home in that rotation and found a slot. You know, he knows what he needs to do every 5 days to be ready, and his stuff looks great. So you just need to, you just need the consistency more than 3 weeks, a month, and carry out through the season. But I really do think that, if the playoffs, again, I keep using this, playoffs were to start today, would he be your number one guy? Probably. I mean, I love what Davis has done this year, and Davis is a leader in that clubhouse, and he's a galvanizing force. But I think Sean, with his stuff, there was a reason he was the opening day starter 2 years ago, right?
Yep.
I mean, he is that kind of stuff, and I think he has that kind of mentality too. So it's good. It's a good issue to have, right, if you have a guy like Sean and Davis at the top of your rotation behind, with Noah and Anthony Kay and Eric Fetty also there. But, yeah, I think he's starting to move into that realm where he could be considered, a one or two guy in a rotation.
Scott Merkin joining me here for another couple minutes on ESPN 1000. So, Merk, something that you mentioned there, and I completely agree, you talked about McDougal and Hagen Smith as, potential young players who right now aren't on the Major League roster who could be pieces that are added to the bullpen later in the season to give the White Sox.
I should add Shane Smith in there too, right?
All right, you're getting ahead of me. That's where I was going, Merk, because you also just talked about Sean Burke and Davis Martin. And the wild thing to me is, of all the things for the White Sox to be in the position that they're at now, I might have, like, the hard part, the hard sell for me, if you told me this before the season began, you would have said, listen, they're going to be in second place, a game out of first place on the 4th of July, and they're going to be 45-42, and they're going to do so without Shane Smith being a meaningful factor in that. That's the thing that would have blown me away. So, what do you think about Shane Smith? Obviously, he just got back earlier this week making his first rehab start as he's been dealing with that rotator cuff issue. Do you think Shane Smith can get back into a spot where he's actually making starts for the White Sox in the second half of the season?
It's interesting. I think he will be in consideration. They haven't really talked about whether he's on target to be back for the rotation. Is he on target to be back and help in some form, sort of like McDougal?
Yeah.
But I think it's there. I mean, even the start before he was sent to Charlotte, he walked 5, which was an issue for him, back into spring training, mm-hmm. but he did strike out 8 as well. So, I mean, he's got the stuff, and if he gets healthy, all options are there. And I mean, it's always nice that you can get a guy like a Shane Smith or a Hagen Smith or a Tanner McDougal, who the only player you lose is the corresponding roster move, right? You don't have to give anything up from your system to add them to whatever your major league cause is already. So it's something probably we can approach a little more with Will tomorrow and ask about, what is the plan now that he's actually made a rehab start? Same with Tanner, who, had a rehab inning. What is the plan with these guys moving forward? They have to have something on the table, right? They're not just going to have them throw and then say, okay, now we'll decide. They got to figure out which direction they're going this year with them and see.
Scott Merkin joining me for one more question here on White Sox Weekly as he's getting set to cover White Sox and Guardians, the third game of 4 at Progressive Field. White Sox trying to end their current losing streak there. All right, Merk, so with this, you mentioned it, the draft is coming up in a week from today.
Yeah.
Chalowski, it seems like it's Chalowski, Emerson, obviously Rock Chalowski, the college player who's 21, Emerson, the high schooler who's 18, Emerson, a lefty, Rock, I think he's the fan favorite, if you will, if nothing else, just because of his cool ass name. Everybody wants to fall in love with get themselves a Chalowski jersey.
It's on the south side, right?
Absolutely. It plays. What do you think? Do you think it's likely that the White Sox select Rock Chalowski? Do you think Emerson is realistically in play, though, as an option?
I think, from all I hear, I think he is. I mean, it's funny. There's been more talk and consternation about this pick than anyone I can remember. Now, granted, it has that kind of significance because it's 1-1, and you really want to make sure you nail everything on this. But it's interesting there's that much talk and that much back and forth when the Sox have all the cards on their hand, right?
Yeah.
Like, they control everything. They don't have to worry about, we need to let, the Rays, who are picking second and we're fourth, know that we may go this way so they won't pick this guy. I mean, if they want you as the number one pick, Jeff, they're going to get him. To get you because
I'll take under slot, Merk. I'll take under slot.
I bet you will. I bet we could each take under slot if I get less than what the number one guy is.
No doubt.
But I think it's just, there's good options there. Let's not forget, was it Vaughn Lackey, right, who caught for Georgia Tech?
Yes.
Another guy who's in there, and I think even Lombard has been mentioned. But I would think it's between Chalowski, probably something surprising, it's Chalowski and Emerson. And I really couldn't make a guess. I will go with, for the most part, the edge I've seen in the mock drafts and guys who really study this in gals every day. Mm-hmm. It's Chalowski, but I would not be surprised if Emerson's name was announced either. It's going to be a good player. And, you know, Mike Shirley is someone who's talked a lot about, who's done a nice job, by the way, over the years since he's been in charge of the draft, but talked about how high school players are different from the old days. It's not guaranteed that when you get a high school player that it's going to take 4 years before he gets to the major. These guys are more advanced than they have been. So that's something to keep in mind. But again, I think it's kind of a coin flip guess with probably Chalowski being the edge right now at 1-1.
Great stuff, Merck. As always, appreciate your time. Let's hopefully see the White Sox put an end to this skid in Progressive Field. And at the very least, let's avoid the rain tonight, okay?
I agree. It looks good right now.
Beautiful. Scott, as always, appreciate it. I'll talk to you on Tuesday at Raid Field, my friend.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Scott Merkin, again, he does a great job covering the White Sox for MLB.com and also has the White Sox newsletter. If you're a Sox fan and you want more content, make sure that you are a subscriber because it will get you all the information that you want and need. Jeff Meller hanging out with you again. Pregame show officially starts at 5:30, but as I always like to say, White Sox Weekly, it's just the extended version of pregame as we talk White Sox with you. When we come back, we'll get you set for action between the White Sox and Guardians. Take a look and see who might be available for Will Venable in his bullpen tonight when we return. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Jeff Meller takes your calls after the game, ESPN Chicago.
Hey, White Sox fans, take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings for select lower-level tickets at $20, starting at $20 on weekdays, and then $25 on weekends. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Jeff Meller here, wrapping up White Sox Weekly as we do each and every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame show starting. We have extended pregame coverage with White Sox Weekly, talking White Sox with you. So as a reminder, if you ever want to jump in and talk some Sox, not on the postgame show, 312-332-3776. That's the number. And again, we do it 2 hours prior to our pregame show every Saturday during the baseball season and even during the non-baseball season when we do it for an hour on Saturdays. So if you ever want to talk White Sox, just remember White Sox Weekly every Saturday on your home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. So the question is, who is available for Will Venable today in his bullpen? And I believe Grant Taylor should be. He was not used yesterday, so obviously Grant Taylor. Now, Sir Anthony Dominguez could be. Now, he threw 16 pitches. He wasn't great, obviously, yesterday. Only went a third of an inning because he walked two in his 16 pitches. I think he'll be available. I would be surprised. I don't think Trevor Richards is going to be used. He threw 28 pitches in two innings, so my guess is that he's probably down. And he is the one who is, you know, I think he would be maybe if Will would maybe prefer not to use him tonight. He threw 15 pitches yesterday. Did not pitch in the series opener against the Guardians, but he did pitch on Wednesday afternoon against the Orioles. So I would think we'll try and get by, but I think Hudson's probably available. Sean Newcomb, he threw 9 pitches yesterday. He did pitch in the opener on Thursday. So if Newcomb's available today, I wouldn't be surprised if it's basically just for a batter or two. So, you know, but again, Newcomb threw 27 pitches in the series opener. So my guess is that Will would really like to avoid using Newcomb today if possible. But we will discuss lots more about today's game as we are about to start our pregame show here in 5 minutes. As always, want to say thank you to Nick Palazzolo for producing today's White Sox Weekly, along with our executive producer, which is Brendan Riley. Sean Burke on the mound for the Sox, trying to stop the bleeding as they have a season-tying 3-game losing streak. Now, that's the thing. I say that, and it sounds bad, but think of how impressive that is. We're entering game number 87 tonight for the White Sox, and they have not lost more than three games. Let's hope tonight is not the first time they do that. But we'll get into that here momentarily. Jeff Meller, this is White Sox Weekly on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.